Daf Mem Dalet Amud Aleph. And we'll try to do today a shiluv and integrate the Gemara itself. We'll learn the sugya here on Daf Mem Dalet Amud Aleph on the bottom, on Mem Dalet Amud Beis on top, and then if it's Hashem to take a look again at this sugya of Kikar Otinok. So we're looking at the last line here about Mita Sheyichta Lemos. And we came to the following conclusion, that if you miyached something which is normally not, does not function as a basis, it's not a natural basis, that's not usually where you place it down, but nevertheless you designated that spot, so certain dinim achal, what dinim achal? Other dinim anachal yet. As far as mukts is concerned, we can generate the following different scenarios. Scenario number one would be where there was mukta on the mita. So we're talking about mita sheyichdua lemos. If there were mos on the mita as we enter into Shabbos, that's bein hashmoshos. Then we apply the principle of migud is katzoy lebein hashmoshos is katzoy lekuli yom. And then, even if the mos fall off the bed is still mukta. It still remains mukta. Its status as a basis is not poka. It doesn't remove itself during the violence of Shabbos because it was there bein hashmoshos. But if it wasn't there bein hashmoshos, so then we have two possibilities. One possibility is that on one occasion minimum, before Shabbos, I used it for mos. So it wasn't just yichud, but it was also hanocha mamish. You actually put the mos on the bed. The mos weren't there going into Shabbos. But we have two variables here that combine. Number one, it was yichud, and number two, it was once used. Which reminds us, of course, of the sugya of Ner Yoshan, which means the Ner was used in the past. There, in the case of Ner Yoshan, we were dealing with the category called Muktzah Machmas Mius, which was Machlokas Tanoim. Here, in the case of Mito, we're not dealing with Muktzah Machmas Mius, but rather we're dealing with the fact that once he was miyacheded for that purpose, it becomes a basis only because he designated it as such. Meaning in and of itself, objectively, there are other places that you would normally put mos. But since he decided that he's going to put his mos down on the mita becomes a basis if on one occasion before Shabbos he used it as such. If on the other hand he did not use it as such, then all he had was yichud, then we have what we call the temporary muktzah, which means that it's only muktzah as long as the mos are on the bed. If the mos are removed from the bed, then he's allowed to move the bed. So we basically have three different paragraphs here. Paragraph number one is yichud plus hanocha. So not only does he designate, but on one occasion he actually used it for mos. And that makes it into a basis. We have another case of yichud without hanocha, meaning he was miyachided for mos, but he never used it as such. And there it all depends on whether the mos are actually on the bed right now. Then we have a third case, which is where there were mos on the bed going into Shabbos, bein hashmoshos. And then we're going to activate the principle of nigud is katzoy, and it's going to be mukta during the entire Shabbos.
Is that case inadvertently or with yichud?
Ah, so that's
I left my money on my bed.
So that's going to be the subject of this Tosus here, Dibra Maskel Uma, and Tosus is going to quote a sugya later on in Masechta Shabbos to prove that it's only if I deliberately placed it on the bed. If I didn't deliberately place it on the bed, then again it goes back to the halacha of temporary muktzah, which means only muktzah while the mos are on the bed. So all these different dinim, we're going to have to, how shall I say, analyze them and perfect them to try to get a good grasp of the sugya. Can you just give me a few minutes just to get into it? So because again, I'm coming from a bris, so I get, yeah. Go ahead.
Sure. Yeah. I'm just slightly confused. Rabbi Shimon, the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon.
The halacha, yeah, we said yesterday.
The halacha is not la halacha.
Well, that is correct. We're gonna have to figure out the following. Rabbi Shimon made two statements. One statement was with regard to muktzah. That's called Rabbi Shimon Lesley Muktzah. There's another statement of Rabbi Shimon that rejects migu. That means as long as the ner is dolek, then the shemen is muktzah. But after the ner is extinguished, in a regular case of a ner katan, then the shemen is mutter, meaning he doesn't accept migu. It's possible that somewhere within the halacha we might accept Rav Shimon Lesley Muktzah, but not accept Rav Shimon as far as Migu. But in theory, the two halachas of Rav Shimon are one and the same. How that's so, we don't know yet. We're going to have to work towards that goal. Okay, here's where we're up to for today. The Gemara says, Omar Ula. So we're now on Daf Mem Dalet Amud Beis, and we're about halfway through the Amud. It's a small, it's a short Amud because Tosfos takes up most of the page. Masiv Rabbi Eliezer. Okay then. All right. Now, we started yesterday to figure out this Mishnah in Masechet Kelim. And that's the Mishnah that Rabbi Eliezer is bothered by. The Mishnah is divided up into four parts, the last of which is relevant to us, but we have to go through all four parts to see the structure of the Mishnah. And let's discuss the following. We're talking about what's called Kli Eitz. Kli Eitz, of course, are wooden utensils. Let's say, for example, in those days they would have a mita, a bed that was made out of wood. Perhaps they had some sort of a wagon, which is called a muchni, we'll see in a minute, that was made out of wood. And a Kli Eitz is makabel tumah. However, there's one major limitation rule. When is a Kli Eitz makabel tumah? Only when it's dumya desak. Okay, the Torah in the parasha of Kli Eitz, we'll have to take out the parasha and see it inside just in a few minutes, talks about a sak. A sak is basically a small kind of a vessel. And because the Torah combines Kli Eitz with sak, we have, and that has nothing to do with the socks you put on your shoes, don't get confused. Okay. It's a sin, which is a shin with the nekuda on the other side, and a kuf.
It's like okay? We call it like a...
Yeah, that's in Sefer Vayikra. So again, if somebody will get me a chumash, we'll bleed nether, as we go along, we'll look up the parsha, the parsha itself. Now, since the Torah stipulates that this Kli Eitz is only Mekabel Tumah, it's only Mekabel Tumah, if it's relatively small, okay, you want to do me a favor and open this up, if you can? To Vayikra Yud Aleph. Vayikra Yud Aleph, Pasuk Lamed Beis. Yud Aleph Lamed Beis. And if you don't have a Chumash, I'll just read the Pasuk out loud to you. It says, Mikol Kli Eitz Obeged O'or O. I guess you don't have the chumash yet. I was hoping to fill in the last one. Yud Aleph Lamed Beis. What page is it on? In the blue chumash.
273.
273 in the blue chumash. Joel, you read it for me. Do me a favor. Mikol Kli Eitz. You have it? O Beged, O R, O?
Sak.
That's the key word. The word is sak. Okay then? Now, we have a sugya in the last perek, which is Bamem Adlikin, that we didn't learn. We started on Daf Lamed Vav with Perek Kira. But if you go back one blot to Daf Lamed He, there the Gemara has the following Hekesh. And it goes the following. Ma sak, just like the case of a sak, which is a relatively small utensil, is mekabel tuma, is so too a kli eitz has to be ke'ein sak. What does that mean, ke'ein sak? A small utensil. And that means that it has to have up to but not beyond the midah, the measurements of 40 saw. Now, if we get a chance, we'll take a look, and this is a very good exercise for you to get used to. There's a dictionary which is called Practical Talmudic Dictionary from Rabbi Yitzhak Frank, and you'll take a look in the back, and it'll tell you exactly what this is in terms of volume. So let's go. Let's understand. If the kli eitz has up to but not beyond 40 saw in terms of the volume that it could have within it, then it's called dumya de sak. It has the same status as a sak, and therefore it's makabel tuma. It's what you would call a kli hametaltel. Metaltel means it's very easy to move it. Yeah. Like, for example, if you go out to our base medrash, you'll see the Aron Kodesh. The Aron Kodesh theoretically could be moved, but because of its large size and heavy volume, you cannot move it. So it's not a davar metaltel. When the Torah talks about kli, the very essence of a kli, its personality, is that it's metaltel, it's a movable. That's what a kli means. That's why, if you recall, when we did the six categories of muktzah of the Beis Yosef, we had one category which was called muktzah machmas chisaron kis, which means a very sensitive and expensive vessel which we lock up to make sure that nobody uses it, except when the professional needs it, but not on Shabbos. And because you lock it up, it becomes like a kli eitz gadol, a very large kli, even though, again, it's a small utensil. You know, it's an izvol shel mayel, or it's a sakin shel shchita. It's not a very large sakin shel shchita, for example, for ofos. Classically, it's about this size for birds. So it's not a large, it can be moved, trust me. But since he locks it up, it's now mufka, it's excluded from being a davar metaltel. And if it's not a davar metaltel, then in Hilchas Kalim, it's not makabel tuma. So we're going to have to see what's the din in Mukta Machmas Chisaron Kis if he locks something up, a utensil, and whether it's makabel tuma or not. Because it might have the same status as what we're learning today, a large vessel that's not metaltel because it has the volume that's greater than 40 saw. So that's what we have here. I'll just read to you what he says here. He says, Hainu, what does it mean? Dumya desak, shu metaltel. Now, what does metaltel mean? Metaltel means lo rak shu reik el gam shu mole. Now, it's even though right now the kli might be empty, but since it has the capacity to be filled up and then it becomes very heavy, it's not usually moved back and forth. Again, Hercules can move it. You get the moving men to come and pick it up with a crane. They'll move it. It's not attached to the ground, but it has the din of karka as opposed to kalim because it's so heavy sitting on the karka that you don't usually move it. So if it has that midah, that measurement, then it's considered eino dumya desak, and it's not makabel tuma. Okay. Now, what we have to know is the following. By the way, I just, on the side, I don't want to get off on a tangent, but I mentioned the Aron Kodesh here because I noticed a lot of people when they get they get psicho, whatever they get a kibud or the kohanim when they go up there, they lean on the Aron Kodesh and they put sfarim on the Aron Kodesh. They do all sorts of things with that little ledge. You'll take a look outside when you get a chance. And I'm not sure, it could be, I have to check this out, that the Aron Kodesh has a din of Beis HaKnesses because of its size and its weight.
And its importance.
Not so much the importance, that's a different question. The bima is also very important, but our bima here in the middle is movable, it's on wheels. I don't think it has a din of Beis HaKnesses. So if, let's say, you decide for whatever reason you're going to daven next to the bima and put your sfarim down there, or maybe even during a kiddush they may lay down some fruits, you know, in a tray on top of it. I don't know that that's a problem, but the Aron Kodesh might have a din of Beis HaKnesses because it has a din of karka. With it, yeah, with an Issa Me'ila. Again, I'm not saying it's Me'ila Doraisa, but, you know, Beis Knesset has the status of Hegdesh. And Me'ila is twofold. Me'ila means when you take away from something, like a Shavu Prutah's worth, but Me'ila also generates an Isra Hanah, and you can't use it for your own purposes. I'm just mentioning, this has to be well thought out, since we're learning the sugya of Kliyeitz. All right. Now, where is the Mishnah that Rabbi Eliezer is quoting? This is in the 15th Perek of Kalim. Kalim is a massive Masecht. And the Mishnah itself is talking about what's called a Shida. A Shida, Shin Yud Dalet He. And that's a very large Kli. And it may have the capacity to hold within it 40 Sah. Now, 40 Sah means Lach. Lach means liquids. So it could hold 40 Sah worth of liquids. And there's a machlokus in the Mishnah between. Please don't ask me any questions until we get used to what's going on. This is a major new topic, so I'm not ready for questions. There's a major machlokus here between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Beit Shammai says, when we calculate the 40 saw mibifnim, meaning forget about all the wood on the outside, the walls, we take a look at the inside, how much liquid befall in actuality could go into the rake, into the empty part of the kli inside. If you have the capacity for 40 saw, up to 40 saw, it's considered a kliyeitz, it's makabel tumah. Beyond the 40 saw, it's not makom. It comes along Beis Hillel, and Beis Hillel say no. The medida, the calculation of 40 saw, is mibachutz, which means that even the wood that surrounds this kli, the shida, is also incorporated. So it's as if you would calculate from the what we call the shido, the chudo shall kli mi bachutz, so the outside, because again these kelim, because they're so large, usually have a very thick wall to them, and from Basil's perspective you can imagine as if that the thickness of the wall was filled up with liquid that also is calculated and integrated into the thing. So now if, let's say, according to Basil, you have a situation where, although in the inside of the kli, it could hold, let's say, 39 saw in the inside of the kli, which means, according to Beit Shammai, that would mean that there is Kabbalah's Tumah. If Tumah falls into this kli, the kli becomes Tameh. According to Beis Hillel, if I add the walls of the kli, and now it hits 40 saw, and we have a principle called the Efshel Tzamtzin, so we assume that 40 saw means a little bit more than a mashu, more than 40 saw, then it's not makabel tumah. So that kli, lechumra, according to Beit Shammai, is lekul, according to Beis Hillel, because Beis Hillel is going to say that after we calculate and we add the walls of the kli, we end up with a shear of 40 saw, and therefore, it's not makabel tumah. It's not makabel tumah. Okay, fine. That's the Mishnah in the 15th Perek of Kalim. Now we fast forward to the Mishnah in the 18th Perek of Kalim. And there the Mishnah says that we paskin like Beis Hillel, that modedin osa mi bachutz, which means together with the wall, the ovi, what's called the ovi hashida, the thickness of the wall around this wooden utensil. And then finally, we have the last Mishnah that we have to deal with, and that's also in the 18th Perek. And it's something called ofan hashida, the word ofan, which you might want to write down, or somebody could write it on the board here. Aleph, vav, pei, nun. The ofan hashida means that there are certain parts of the outside of the shida that go up, they're vertical, and the ofen hashida has to deal with four different halachas. So I'm going to read to you these four different halachas.
I'm not sure what you mean by ofen.
Okay, well, hold on to your questions.
Hold on to your questions,
and hopefully after we go through these four, you'll get a grasp on it. You have to give me a little bit of flack over here, okay? Number one. This ofan hashida, is it part of the wagon? Is it not part of the wagon? What that means is that since this ofan hashida, which again, later on I'll show you the picture of it, is something that holds on, it's like a structural part of the agala, of the wagon, do we consider that it's part of the wagon or not? Which means that if Tumah, let's say a Sheretz for example, would come in contact with one of the Ofanim, then all the Ofanim, there are usually two Ofanim that structure this Agalah, all the Ofanim become Tame. Why? Because the Ofanim are considered part of the structure of the Kli, and therefore anything that's part of the structure of the Kli becomes Tame when a Sheretz falls on the Kli. And since the Sheretz fell on one of the Ofanim, if we view the Ofanim as part of the Kli, then the second Ofan is also part of the Kli. Okay? And it becomes Tame. Next. Now we have the Shita of Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel, if you remember, says that we measure the Ofan from the outside, from the Bachutz. Now the question is, I understand the walls of the Kli, right? Those are the basic part of the Kli, but what about the Ofanim, which are there to structure the Kli? Do we consider them also part of the Kli? Because it could be that the Ofan is even outside of the walls of the Kli. So you have the inside of the Kli, you have the walls of the Kli, and then you have the Ofanim, right? An Ofan on one side, an Ofan on the other, which are structural, and they go up, but they're attached to the outside of the Kli. So according to it's not relevant according to Beit Shammai, because he says the Medid is where? Mibachutz, but according to Beis Hillel that the Medida of 40 saw is Mibachutz, do I also count the Ofan as part of that Medida? And that's going to be, if we do decide to count the Ofan, that's going to be a kula, because it's going to be easier again to get 40 saw the more that you add to the Medida. Then we go on to the next question. We have something called Hatzola Bifnei Ha'ohel. What does that mean? If there's a mess in the Ohel, and there's a roof on top of the Ohel, that roof is Matzil Mituma, which means any Kli that's on top of the roof remains Tar, because the mess is underneath the roof, so the roof is Matzil Bifnei Ha'tuma. Okay, for that we'd have to learn Masechta Olos. Very complicated. I once tried my hand at Masechta Olos. I dropped it like a hot tent, a hot potato. Very hard. Because there's certain cases that if there's not enough space inside the Ohel, then even if you have a roof on top of the Ohel, it's called what's called Tumah Ritzutza, which is Ohel Ad L'Rakia. But generally speaking, if there's...
That impacts those people who are coming flying and playing.
Yeah, if there's space inside the Ohel, then the roof is a Matzil Bifnei Ha'tumah. Now, the question here is, what is the status of the Ofan? We said before that we're not sure if the Ofan is part of the Kli in such a way that the second Ofan, if one of the two Ofanim was in contact with the Sheretz, the second one is also Tamei. We weren't sure, going to Beis Hillel, where the Ofan is part of the Kli such that the Medida Bibachutz includes the Ofan. And now we're not sure if the Ofan is part of the Kli if, let's say, you find another Kli which is on the outside of the Ofan but attached to the Ofan. Should we say that the Ofan itself is Matzil Bifnei Atuma? And I'll read to you what he says here in the Masifti. He says, Kol Zeh, this only applies B'kelim She'eshlem Toras Kabbalas Tuma. Ach, Shida Gedola Me'arboim Sof. If the Shida itself is larger than 40 Sof, the Eino Me'kabbalas Tuma, Af Chotzetzes Hi Bifnei Atuma Shalel. So again, if we assume that after the Medida we came to the conclusion that this Shida is not Mekabel Tumah, why? Because it's larger than 40 Sah, then we have another rule. If it's not Mekabel Tumah, then it's Matzil Bifnei Ha'tumah. That's called Chatzitza, a separation. So it separates between the Tumah and something that's on top of it. And therefore, if let's say you take a Shida into a cemetery, and there are vessels, there are utensils that are sitting on top of the Shida, and the Shida itself is not Mekabel's Tumah because it's larger than 40 Sa, then the kalim on top of the shida are not makabel tumah. Why? Because anything that's not makabel tumah is chotzeitz bifnei atumah. And now the question is, what's the status of the ofen hashida? If it's part of the shida, in a case where the shida has less than 40 saw, then it's makabel tumah, and the shida cannot be a chatzitza. But if on the other hand, the ofan is considered a separate utensil, a separate cheftza, a separate object, and it's not part of the shida itself, then it could be matzelis bifnei atumah, because it itself is not makabel tumah. Okay. And all this leads up to our discussion about muktzah. How's it? Wait, just 1 minute.
You said you
just 1 second. Let me get to the fourth. I didn't get to the fourth. This is the main thing. This is the punchline. Okay. What is number four? Number four is the case of muktzah. What happens if we have mos that are sitting on top of the ofan? What status does the shida have? We said before that if you have a mita sheyichta lemos, it was designated for mos, then the mita itself becomes, under certain circumstances, a basis. Does the shida become a basis for these mos if the mos are sitting where? On the ofan. And again, this all depends on the other three questions that we asked. No, let's go over the three questions. Number one, is the ofan part of the agala such that if tumah touches one ofan, then the other ofan is also nitma? Number two, if we calculate according to Beisil Mibachutz, the 40 sod, do we calculate even with regard to even outside the ofan, because the ofan is considered part of the agola? Number three, if there's tumah inside the agola, does that tumah impact on the ofan? And if it doesn't, the ofan now becomes a chatzitza for any kalim that are outside the ofan. And finally, the last question, which is most relevant to us today, is what happens if there are mos sitting on the ofan? Are you allowed to be metaltel the shida? Do we view the shida as a busis limos? Or do we say no? The ofan is the busis limos. And the ofan itself is a separate entity. It's not part of the kli, it's not part of the shida. And therefore, the mos on top of the ofan have no impact on the agola itself. Yeah, Shmuel.
No, that's it.
Okay, so that's number four.
Thank you.
Now I want to show you the picture. We're going to go through three different pictures. Basically, the first picture, which is the one on the right, is the one that Rabbi Eliezer is going to focus our attention on. Amar Ula, Masiv Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer is going to ask a kasha on Rav, because we just had Rav Shita, that if you had Yichad as a Mita, you Meyachid the Mita for Mos, and you placed Mos on the Mita, then the Mita becomes a Basis L'Doros. Correct? Let's go over the words of Rav. Mita, this is four lines down from the top of the page. Mita sheyichda lemos, he niach oleh mos osu letaltala. Once he implements that dedication and he actually puts the mos on top of the mita becomes a basis l'davar os. Okay. Lo hiniach oleh mos, mutal letaltala. Lo yichda lemos, if he never was miyachid it, then it's not a basis, but yesh oleh mos, during the time period that there are mos on it, that's what we call temporary muktzah, osu letaltala. Ein oleh mos, mutal letaltala. Okay, and all this is predicated on the premise that there were no mos bein hashmashos going into Shabbos. Muchni. Okay, now we're talking about this wheel. You'll see that in the agala that we have in the picture, which I'll show you in a minute, there are four wheels, and each wheel is called a muchni, which I think, if I'm not mistaken, is a Hebrew word from Lashon Kodesh, and it's in the Mishnah. Again, this is the Mishnah in the 18th parak of Kehilim, and that's called a muchni. Okay. Now, another word for muchni in Lashon Kodesh is an ofan. Now, why is this Mukhni, this wheel, a subject of so much discussion? So if you take a look at a very long Rashi, we're only going to be interested in a few words of this Rashi. Rashi Dibra Maschil Eino, it's about 10-15 lines down. He writes, do you see, you may see the words Bas Kibule. I don't know if you saw those words.
What's the difference between Eino Chibur?
Yeah, Eino Chibur Shalah. So there, Rashi says something about a base Kibul. Okay? Now, why is the Ofan, which is the wheel of the Shida, called a Mukhni? A Mukhni is generally speaking something that has a base Kibul. And if you take a look here, Ben, you have footnote number Yudalid.
Yes.
So you'll take a look. He says the following. Af hu me'eitz, even this wheel was made of wood. Today they make wheels out of other substances, other materials, but then they made a wheel made of eitz. And then he adds four words here, which you have to underline. He says, v'yeshlo base kibul. Now again, I'm not exactly sure. In the picture, he doesn't show you clearly what the base kibul is. Maybe you have a picture that shows you the base kibul. I don't know. But let's just accept it right now on blind faith. Okay, that this wheel has a base kibul, which means that it's hollow on the inside. And then he writes that ofan or galgal, which is the wheel, shalashida. Kori Mukhni. Why is it called Mukhni? Al Shem Shehu Basis. In other words, you can place things down because of this base kibul onto the ofan, and that gives it the word Mukhni. And he quotes a pasuk in Shmos. What does the pasuk say? Just 1 second, I skipped a few words. Al Shem Shehu Basis. V'chein Lishida Hanesuna Olav. Okay, I'm not exactly sure what he means Hanesuna Olav, but we'll come back to that. Kimo, the pasuk says Veskino Nechoshes. So the word Mukhni comes from the root word Kino or Kano. Kano means some sort of a base kibul. Shehu Habasis Shaolav Nasun Hakior. So the kiyor, which was has a fancy word in English, we call it a kind of a sink, a basin. What's the word? With an L? What's it called?
A laver.
Okay, so it has a certain base to it. The base holds up the kinar, and that the kiyor, excuse me, and that's called a kano, which is here in our Mishnah called a mukhni. So a mukhni is something that has a base kibul on it and therefore can hold something up. Okay, now this is all according to Rashi. Rabbeinu Tam has a different explanation of what Mukhni is, but in any event, according to Rabbeinu Tam, as according to Rashi, the Mukhni somehow holds the Agola, so the Agola is together. You see, what you have to look at in this picture is that the wheels, like any case of wheels, hold up the agola. So you can't see it so clearly in the picture, but the agola is obviously lifted up above the ground. And what's actually lifting the shida, the agola, above the ground, it's these wheels. Do you follow me? And therefore the wheels are considered a buses. Rabbeinu Tam says the wheels are a buses, and that's called a mukhni. And Rashi identifies the mukhni as an ofan, but he adds the fact that this ofan has a base kibul to it. Bizman shei nishmetes. Now the question is, how tightly is the wheel adjusted or connected to the shida itself?
Permanent.
Yeah, if it's nishmetes, which means that you can take it apart, that means that it's not permanently or irreversibly attached. He says here, Rashi, ke'en ofani agola shalonu. In our cases, he says that the ofanim, these wheels of the wagon, Adam yachal esalko bimenu, they come in and they come out. They can be attached and then detached. And therefore, ein chibur lo. Now we don't see these wheels as if they are part and parcel of the shida, because they're not permanently attached to the shida. And therefore, if tuma touches either the shida or another ofan, then this ofan does not become tame, because this ofan is not part of the shida. In other words, if the tumah is inside the shida, the ofanim remain tahar. If the tumah is on one of the ofanim, then that ofan becomes tame. The shida itself and the other ofan remain tahar. Why? Because eino chibur lo means we view the ofan as a separate entity. It's chashiv kikli bifnei atzmo. And if it's a separate kli, then any tumah that touches it makes that kli tame, but it has no impact on the rest of the shida. That was one of the four nafkaminas that we spoke about. The other nafkamina that we spoke about was, according to Beis Hillel, do you calculate the 40 sov of the shida together with the ofan, which again is called the muchni? And the Mishnah says in the 18th parak of Kelim, v'ein nimdedes ima, that even according to Beis Hillel, who goes to the outer part of the kli, that doesn't include the ofanim. Why? Because they're not tightly attached to the shida. And if they're not tightly attached to the shida, they are considered as a separate kli, a separate entity. We cannot consider it as part of the shida, and therefore we cannot be makil and include it in the calculation of the 40 sah. And therefore, ein matzelas ima be'ol ames. So now what happens? You've taken the shida into the base hakvaros, correct? And we said that if there's a roof on top of the shida that covers the ohel, then any tumah that's inside will have no impact on kalim that are on top of the roof. But that's only because the roof of the agala is part of the agala itself. You know, like a baby...
carriage.
I don't want to use the word carriage. What's it called? The smaller one.
Stroller.
Excellent. That's the word I needed. Thanks, man. A stroller. Like, and you have a baby stroller, right? So do we consider the top part of the stroller, what do we call it, the roof? What word do you use?
The
covering, whatever it is.
Canopy.
Is it the canopy? Is it part of the stroller? Or is it not part of the stroller? So the answer is, since you can take it apart easily, it's not part of the stroller. And if it's not part of the stroller, if you would to imagine a situation where there was tuma inside the stroller, and you have kalim sitting on top of the canopy of the stroller, then those kalim would become tame. So if you rolled, let's say, a stroller into a beis hakvaros, then even the kalim on top of the canopy of the stroller, which is here in our Mishnah called the muchni, since it's nishmetes, it can be easily taken apart and put back together again. Therefore, those kalim are makabel tuma. Let me just read to what he says. He says, "Klomar im shida gedola she'ena makabelas tuma nichneses lebeis hakvaros vakelu shalgaba boltim v'yotzim michutz." Oh, I'm sorry. He has a different interpretation than mine. He says the following, that you roll this shida into a beis hakvaros, and there are kalim that are on top of the shida, and they stick out beyond the thickness of the defanos. So here's the dofen, right? Here's the wall of the shida. The shida itself is more than 40 saw. So anything inside the shida is not makabel tumah, but he has a kli that stretches over beyond and into the airspace of the beis hakvaros. So therefore he says, Osam kelim shal gaba bolten v'yotzim michutz la'ovi dofno seha. Those kelim become tamei. Ulam, however, ein yotzin umahilim al hakvarim mamish elamahilim al ovi hagalgal. Okay, so he has in this picture that he's got some sort of
the thing sticking over there.
Yeah, he's got he's got a kli that is sort of like a 90 degree angle, meaning it's a vertical kli, like a hoe or so, but it also has a piece that sticks out. Now that piece that sticks out is sitting on the muchni, and it's on what's called the ovi ha-galgal. Is Einom Rimsha Galgal Hu Chelik Me'ashida? You might want to argue that since the Kli is on top of the Galgal, if the Galgal is attached to the Shida, and the Shida is more than 40 Saw, therefore the Kli that's on top of the Galgal is not Tomei. And the reason for that is because even though that Kli is not directly over the Shida, but it's on top of the Galgal, but that's only this man sheyesh lo chibur. Now we're talking about a case of ein lo chibur, which means that the muchni is not absolutely and shall I say permanently attached to the shida, and insofar as that's concerned, the shida doesn't have the power to be matzeles, to be a chatzitza b'fnei atuma, as far as that part of the kli which is beyond the shida. And it stretches over into the galgal, into the muchni, because that muchni, insofar as it's ein lo chibur, is a separate kli. So the shida itself could be chotzitz b'fnei atuma, and therefore any kalim that are inside the shida would not become tame. However, as far as the muchni is concerned, anything that's on top of the muchni will become tummy, insofar as it's in the airspace of the beis hakvaras. And why is it makabel tumah? Why can't the shida that's not makabel tumah be a chotzetzes and protect and save the kli? And the answer is because this kli is leaning on the muchni, and the muchni is not permanently attached to the shida. The engorin also, this is the part that's most relevant to us, the engorin osa b'shabes b'zman sheyesh oleh mos. Okay, now what's the case now? The case now is where there are mos on top of the muchni. Okay, he doesn't have a picture of this, but there are mos on top of the galgal, on top of this wheel. And the Mishnah says, "Ein gorin osa b'shabes." You're not allowed to drag the agala, which is on wheels, right? Move it. Why? Because there are mos on the muchni, which means that this galgal is to be viewed as part and parcel of the shida. This is very strange, because until now we've said that if it's bisman shi nishmetes is ein chibur la, we view the muchni as a separate entity. But now the Mishnah is taking a turn in the opposite direction, and it's assuming that the muchni is part and parcel of the shida, and therefore if there are mos on the muchni, then kevan sha galgal nase bosis lemos shehein muktza. Wait a minute, has that affect the shida? Let's just see. Ein gorin osa b'shabes. He says the following. This is, Ben, if you want to follow me inside, number chavav. He says, b'mishna senu midubar b'ofan she la galgal yesh base kibul, that we discussed before, that according to Rashi, this wheel, do me a favor, Shmuel, could you open the door for me just 1 second? Yeah. Rabosai, could you please close the door if you don't mind? Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Okay. The doors here, they have paper thin. It's, okay. So when I'm learning a new sugya, which as you can see has so many different variables, I'm being flooded by new variables. The bris didn't help me this morning either. Okay. So he says the following. Okay, this apparently is a very important factor. We saw it in Rashi. The galgal has a hollow to it. Valkain, and as a result of this hollow, who misparek me'ashida, you can detach it from the shida. This reminds me of the trumpet that I spoke to you about, which is also a sugya back on daf Lamed Hey. You remember I told you the trumpet, since it's wide on one side, has a base kibul. It could be like a funnel. Here too, the somehow the wheel itself, again, I don't understand the engineering so well, how to orchestrate this, but because it can function in many different capacities, meaning you can sometimes use it as wheels for the shida, right, to make it a shida on wheels, so that we can roll the shida. It also has a function, even if it's detached from the shida, insofar as it has a base kibul. Again, in the picture, I don't see the base kibul, but we're going to have to take it on blind faith and imagine there's some sort of a base kibul in this wheel. And therefore, just one second, Joel, you're going to help me out here in just a second. I just want to get through this one footnote. He says, "Asur l'taltel es hashida im hagalgal hanimshach ima." He's saying the following: that when you drag the shida, then beyond question, you're going to drag also what? The wheels of the shida. And, now here's the punchline. So what's the problem if there are mos on top of this mukhni, on top of this wheel? He says the following. Kevan shagalgal hu kli bifnei atzmo. The wheels have a status of a kli. As we said before, it's not permanently attached to the shida, which means it can easily be removed and function as an independent kli. It has a base kibul to it. Nimtza, it comes out, shamos sha'olov, munachos al ikro shel kli. In other words, it's not like you can have mos that are on one kli and they're not on another kli. Here he's saying that the galgal is not seen as a secondary auxiliary attachment to the shida, but rather the galgal has the status of a kli unto itself, and therefore the mos are munachos al ikro shel kli. Are you able to underline those words? It's your Gemara. I don't know what your policy is.
I didn't bring my pen today.
Oh, if anybody has a pencil. Okay, because this is a key concept here. Ikro shel kli. What makes the most sitting? How do we define the most as sitting on ikro shel kli? That's the fact that the galgal is a kli unto itself. The kevan shehein al ikriya kli, since the mos are sitting on the ikro shel kli, nechshav ikriya kli kibosis lemukta v'asu l'taltalo. Now I'm not so sure I understand this. He's not really being metaltel the galgal. He's really being metaltel the shida. But I guess since the galgal is attached to the shida, that's considered, I don't know why it's not tiltul menatzad, but anyway, it's considered a tiltul on the galgal. Aval ima galgal eino misparek shash me'ashida. Oh, now we go to the flip case. Let's take the other case where he takes the galgal and he attaches it permanently to the shida. And then where are the mos now? The mos are sitting on the galgal. The galgal is no longer ikar kli. Why? Because now the galgal is serving in a secondary capacity, functioning in order to facilitate the movement of the shida. And therefore, muto ligror es hashida, you're allowed to drag the shida, even though you know without a shadow of a doubt that it's going to move the wheels and there's mos on top of the wheels. Kevan shehem chashuvim kli. What is this next word? Kli echad. Oh, kli echad. Oh, this is mamish counterintuitive. He says, since you've attached the shida in a permanent way, therefore it becomes one kli together with the shida. But on the other hand, even though it's part of the shida, it's still not part of the shida. What do I mean? It's got a secondary function. So you've got a kli. The kli includes A plus B. But B in this case functions on behalf of A. A is the kli. What's a kli? A kli is something into which we put things. So the shida is the kli. The galgalim of the shida now are functioning on behalf of the kli. Nimtza, it turns out that the galgal is not the ikar kli. It's part of the kli, but it's not the ikar kli. V'amos einam nisunos al ikar kli. Those mos that are sitting on the shida are not considered part of the ikar kli. Shehu guf hashida. The shida itself is the ikar kli. V'hein eino osos oso betiltul. So Rav Osler, I'm going to come back to this in just 1 minute. I just want to read the next line in the Gemara, and then I think I'll have it, hopefully. So now comes along Rabbi Eliezer, and he says the following, that if it's Ein Chibur La, it's not attached permanently, the Galgal is not attached to the Shida permanently, then the law is that Ein Gorin Osa, then you're not allowed to pull the Shida and move the galgal, because the galgal becomes ikra kli in the most hamunachem al ikra kli. Ha, let's be medayik. Ein aleha mos. If right, in other words, everything seems to in the Mishnah be dependent upon this moment in time. He wants to drag the agala, the shida, at 12 noon on Shabbos afternoon, and the Mishnah says it depends. Are there mos on top of the muchni? If there are mos on top of the muchni, then you have a serious case of basis, because now, since the muchni is a kli b'fnei atzmo, because ein lo chibur, therefore it has the status of munach, right? Mos munach al ikara kli, and therefore ein gorin osa. But what happens if right now there are no mos on top of the muchni, on top of this galgal? Ha ein oleh mos sharia. Then you would be allowed to move or drag the shida in such a way that now you're moving also the separate kli, right? The independent kli, which is called what? The muchni or the galgal? Afal gav da havi alei b'bein hashmashos. Even if there were mos sitting on top of the galgal, bein hashmosh is going into Shabbos, and this contradicts Rav, because Rav held that if there's mukta, if there are mos on top of the mita going into Shabbos, then you're not allowed to move the mita, even if what? Even if the mos are removed from the mita, because it's a basis l'darasa going into Shabbos. Yeah, Dr. Chol, you.
My point is that you want to know what the buses was for the gula. Maybe it's where the axle enters into it. But that would be the base kibul.
At the point where the axle enters into what? The wheel?
The wheel, in the center of the wheel, and there's a hole, and the axle goes in there. Maybe that's the base
kibul. So if you took the wheel off and you tipped it over on the side.
Maybe that's what they're calling a base
kibul. That's the base kibul. Excellent. I like that. I don't know why he couldn't do a little bit better job here with a. You know, if you're already doing diagrams, you know, you might as well
let us know. It sounded like you had a secret compartment until now.
So let me just read Ben one more line, and the Gemara answers, "Hahi, that Mishnah in Kalim is Rabbi Shimon. He the lesle mukta." Okay, finally we get to these holy words that we've been mentioning a dozen times, if not a couple of dozen times. That Rabbi Shimon lesle mukta. Now, what does this mean, lesle mukta? This is not the Leslie Muksa that we were thinking about. You know, we spoke about Tamar the Iskir, and we spoke about a Nair, and maybe, you know, he'll use the Nair, and so forth. So this is the Rav Shimon who rejects Migu the Skatzoil Ben Hashmashos the Skatzoil Kuliyoma. When Rav made his statement that if there are mos on the mita going into Shabbos, then the mita remains muksa for the entire balance of Shabbos, even after the mos are removed. He was holding like Rabbi Yehuda, who maintains that migud is katzoy, etc. But if you hold like Rabbi Shimon, and this Mishnah apparently holds Rabbi Shimon, and therefore everything depends upon the moment, that we are addressing now, the moment of now, the hover, is there mukta on the kli? If there's mukta on the kli, you can't move it. If there's no mukta on the kli, you can move it, even if there was mukta on the kli entering into Shabbos Bein Hashbos, because Rav Shimon rejects with me.
Yeah, I was just thinking that Ikre, Hakli, and Basis are opposites. If the wheels are just the Basis, they're not the Ikre.
Where are you?
I'm just saying, if you underline the term Ikre Hakli.
What number, if you don't mind?
Just sorry, it's in Kafav.
Okay, Kafav, good.
So we talked a couple times about Ikre Hakli.
Right.
But if the wheels are a basis, that doesn't seem like the Ikre Hakli. It seems like Ikre Hakli and Basis are opposites. The wagon itself is the Ikar Kli, and the wheels are the basis, which is not Ikar Kli. That's just what I'm seeing. Maybe I'm not seeing it correctly.
He says the following, that if it's misparik me'ashida, right, that's what we call bismanshi nishmetes, then he says the galgal is considered Ikar Shal Kli. And once it's Ikar Shal HaKli, then the mos are sitting on this Kli, the Kli becomes a basis. But if on the other hand the Galgal is attached permanently to the Shida, then it becomes what I call in Yiddish a Nachschlepper. You know what I mean by a Nachschlepper? You know, it's like Lot. You know, he used to hold on to Avraham Avinu, you know what I mean? He held on to his coattails. Yeah. That's called a Nachschlepper. There used to be a television program, I forget what it was called, about a Nachschlepper. It was a sailor. Do you remember Dr. Joel? There was a sailor, Inkabad, what was his name? Something Kabad, a sailor, and he used to hold on to a balloon and get carried up by a balloon. Anyway, I'll remember later on. That's called a Nachschlepper, you know what I'm saying?
So he's
what?
Kubir.
Okay. So be that as it may, what we're talking about is a galgal she'eno misparik me'ashido. And if it's a galgal she'eno misparek me'ashida, then on the one end, the galgal is considered part and parcel of the shida, because it's eno misparek, but on the other hand, it functions tafel, so to speak, in a secondary capacity to facilitate the movement of the shida. And therefore, when the mos are sitting on the galgal, they're not sitting on the ikar akli, and therefore it's not considered a bus. So now he's saying a new halach which we're not familiar with, and that is that a bus is only if the mos or the muksa is sitting on the ikar akli. If they're sitting on the ikar akli, then that part that's holding up the mos, holding up the muksa, is a bus. But if it's not the ikar akli, then it's not a bus. So again, all this has to be studied. It'll have to wait till next Wednesday. But you guys might be able to do it during my absence. I don't know. Okay, Kirab Yehuda Sfirle. Now let's see the Gemara here on the top of Memhei Amud Aleph. Hachinami Mistabra. It's logical to assume that this Mishnah reflects the Shita Rabbi Yehuda. And not only that Rav, when he spoke about the Mita, and he said that if there are mos on the Mita going into Shabbos, the Mita remains mukta for the entire Shabbos, even if the mos are removed. Rav Yehuda Svirle Rav embraces the Shita of Rav Yehuda, that Migud is Katzol ben Hashmos is Katzol Kuliyoma. The Omar Rav, from a different statement of Rav, Menichem Ner Al Gabe Dekel B'Shabbos. You're allowed to take a ner. Okay, we have to see what kind of ner we're talking about. But let's assume that this ner is... Well, again, we're talking about Erev Shabbos now. So the ner might be a ner that will become mukta. Let's say maybe it's a ner yashan, if you hold, like Rabbi Yehuda, mukta machmas mius. Or maybe he's going to light up this ner. We have to see exactly. Menichem ner al gabi dekel. This dekel is a tree, right? Like a date tree or a palm tree. Vaner. And what's going to be the status of this ner? yishaer, it will remain on this, on this, I guess there's some sort of wooden plank or flat area on this tree. V'idolek b'Shabbos, and it's going to be lit for Shabbos. And the chiddush here is that we're not afraid that after the ner goes out, he's going to take the ner from the ilan. And now he writes v'nimtza mishtamesh b'mechuber l'karka. Interesting. The eitz itself, which is, or the ilan, is called mechuber l'karka, and we have a new halacha here. He writes that Chachamenu Asru Lishtamish B'Shabbos Yontov B'Mechubar La'aretz. Okay, again, this is a sugya later on, Kufnun Hey, on page 155. So when you get to 155, let me know. In the meantime, we're going to accept this as axiomatic that you're not allowed to be Mishtamish with Mechubar La'karka. So we're afraid if he leaves the. We're not afraid, but we could have been afraid. The Havamina before Rav was that we would be afraid that if he leaves the Ner Doluk on top of the Eitz, then he might come to use this Elon, use this Eitz on Shabbos. You're not allowed to do that because Mechubar LaKarka. And how would he do so? By removing the Ner from the Eitz. The Ein Menichim Ner Al Gabi Dekel B'Yontif. But on Yontif itself, we're not going to allow you to place your nair onto this tree. Shechoshim, we're afraid, sheyovo litlo ulach zero meha ilon v'nimtza mishtamish be'ilon. If he takes it and puts it back onto the ilon, he's going to be mishtamish be'ilon. I'm not sure what's the between Shabbos and Yontif. Okay, that we have to get to. E amrit bishleima de Rav Karabiyu de Sfirile. If Rav accepts the principle of migu hainu de shani ben Shabbos and Yontif, then we can make sense out of this distinction between Shabbos and Yontif. And on that we have a whole piece here that I'm going to read to you. El e amrit kerab shimin sfirile. If Rav rejects migu mali Shabbos umali Yontif. There's no difference between Shabbos and Yontif. So let's try to understand what would justify this distinction between Shabbos and Yontif. We're going L'chumra and Yontif. That's paradoxical. He says the following. B'Yontif, Asar Rav Laniach Ner Al Gabi Dekel. Why was Rav more strict on Yontif? And he prohibits you from leaving the Ner on top of the Dekel. And they should cave on Shemetaltalin Ner B'Yontif. Since there is no Iser Mukta with regard to a Ner on Yontif, because you're allowed to light a candle on Yontif. Is Choshishin Shema Yavo Litlo Meha Ilan B'Yontif, right? Notes, he's not naturally going to pull away and be inhibited from taking the Ner. He naturally would stretch his arm out and take the Ner because it's not Mukta. He's not aware of the fact that he's guilty now of using the Elon. And he says the following: even though this Nair was Doluk, it was lit, it doesn't matter. Avol b'Shabbos, why are we going to be making on Shabbos? That's because of the fact that on Shabbos, also l'taltel es haner shedolak b'knisas haShabbos b'chol haShabbos, meaning even when the ner goes out, it still remains mukta. And he's a big Talmud Chacham, and he knows the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda that therefore, Rav says you're allowed to leave it on erev Shabbos on the dekel, and we're not choshish that after the candle goes out, he's going to take the dekel. He's going to take the ner off the dekel, because he knows that the ner is muktzah. Kevin Shiyodesh, a ner osim shu muktzah, because of the principle of migu. And all that makes sense if Rav accepts the shita of Rabbi Yehuda as far as migu is concerned. E amrit ki Rabbi Shimon svirale. If you're going to tell me that Rav accepts Rabbi Shimon, the male is no difference between Shabbos and Yontif, because just like Yontif is mutter because there's no Yisrael luck on Yontif, so too Shabbos is going to be mutter because we don't accept migu, and when the candle goes out, the nair becomes mutter. And therefore, again, we should be choshesh that he's going to move the nair off the tree, and when he does so, he uses the tree and benefits from the tree, which is prohibited based on a sugya on Daf Kuf Nun Hey of an Aleph.
Because the tree is mechubar, the karka. Is that the reason of the Easter?
What do you say?
The reason of the Easter is because the tree is mechubar.
Correct. There's a din that osel shtamesh b'mechubar l'karka. That's the halacha. Again, we don't know much about it.
Is that the same thing about climbing a tree? That's something else.
No.
Shemi yitlosh.
Yeah, no, that's climbing a tree.
Yeah,
he's not climbing a tree.
But what are we talking about here?
He's using the kli as a shelf. And he takes a nair off the shelf and he puts it back on. It's like a treehouse kind of thing, if you know what I mean.
What's the problem again?
So you're not allowed to be mishtamesh with mechubar l'karka. Since the Elon is mechubar l'karka, if he uses the tree, the Elon, as a shelf,
what?
Then he violates mechubar l'karka.
Is that an Isidore Rabbanim?
No, that's an Isidore Rabbanim. And that's a Sugyan Daf Kuf Nun Hey Amid Aleph, which I'm sure you're all familiar with, as I am too. Okay, so when you get to Kuf Nun Hey, you'll tell me why the Chachamim prohibited using mechubar l'karka. And if you have a Gemara now, you can look it up. Right now, I had a Gemara Shabbos here. Oh, good. Yehuda, this Gemara has your name on it, so to speak. Proverbially, not literally. And it says, Yehuda, please look up Kuf Nun Hey Amid Aleph and tell me why, so that not all the burden of work is on one person. Why the Chachamim prohibited using mechubar l'karka? Okay, then. So that's your assignment, if you don't mind.
Kuf Nun Hey Amid Aleph.
Kuf Nun Hey Amid Aleph, 155. Okay, 155 is a very important number. You'll ask me after Shia why. I'll tell you why 155 is a very important number, especially in Parshas Vayera. Okay, so the Gemara asks the following question. V'Rav K'Rav Yehuda Sfirale? Is Rav absolutely convinced that halacha is like Rav Yehuda? Amigu Skatzoy Ben Ashmosh Skatzoy L'Kuli Yoma for Boy Minei De Rav. The Talmidim asked Rav a question. Ma'u Little Tule Shroga De Chanuksa. We're talking about Ner Chanukah. Mikame Chabore B'Shaite. Ha'im Mutu L'Taltil Ner Chanukah Shekava. Ulesalko me'achotzer labayis kidei shelo yedu hachaborim shehidliku ner b'chotzezu veheim hikpidu shelo yadliku. I suspect we're talking about anti-Semites here. Let's see if I'm right.
You're wrong.
He says shem uma shahoysa am haparsim v'hoyu mashchisim. I guess they would destroy the Tarfanim. They were very aggressive. So again, what's the problem? If he leaves his Ner Chanukah in the Chotzer Abayis, then he's going to get in deep trouble here with the Parsiim. And they were makpid that they shouldn't light Ner Chanukah.
Yes, because they didn't want lights. That's the point.
Lights?
Lights at all.
Oh, I see. They were opposed to lights.
Yes.
Only in the
all lights. They lived in the dark.
The Persians only wanted light.
Dark ages. What did he say?
The Persians only wanted light in their Avodah Zarah. So the Jews weren't allowed to have light in their place.
I see. Like he says the following. In the footnote, he says, Gazru hachaborim, these chaborim, which are the Parsiim, she Israel lo yadliku ner chanuka, umesalko mea pesach mishum shechoshe hachaborim yedushu ner chanuk she yiruhu munach al pesach beso mibachutz. I have a feeling this is what the Gemara calls in the beginning of Shabbos, mishas sakon of yeluch. That it was very dangerous to light Ner Chanukah on the outside. That's why they allowed them to light Ner Chanukah on the inside. And he says, Biyom Edom, they had certain days that were
holidays.
Calendar days that were designated for idol worship. Lo Yadliku Ar Bishum Makom, they shouldn't light any light anywhere. Chutz mi Beis Avodah Zarah Shelahem, except inside their idolatry temples. Okay, so what's going to be now? Maul italtule shraga de chanuksa mikame chabore bishabsa. So we're talking about an overlap of Hanukkah and Shabbos. And now,
but tell me where they were around. They got upset.
Okay, so they were around, and now what we want to get it, we want to get it out of the chatzer, because otherwise they might discover the Ner Chanukah. But on the other hand, the Ner itself entering into Shabbos was Muktzah. And even though now it went out, right, because it says Shraga the Chanukah saw, okay, Shekava, okay, here he says Shekava, and it's Migu Diskatzol Ben Ashmashas. And what did Rav answer? Amar Lahu, Rav responded, Shapir Dami. You're allowed to take the Ner from the Chatzer and bring it into your bias once it was Chava, once it was extinguished. Now Rav is rejecting Rabbi Yehuda's principle of Migu. How could he allow you to be metaltel? So the Gemara answers, Shasat Chak Shaini. This is a fascinating Gemara because it doesn't say Shas HaSakana, it says Shas HaDchak. Now, if we identify Shas HaDchak with Shas HaSakana, I really don't understand why the Talmidim asked Rav this question to begin with. If there's human life in danger, in jeopardy, then surely you're allowed to violate these Muktzah. So let me just read to you what he says over here. And this is the Masifti says Shonet Din Shasa Sakana. Oh, so he definitely identifies the Shasa Sakana.
Rashi uses Sakana.
Yeah. Well, the Masifti is based on Rashi. I only use the Masifti instead of Rashi because he summarizes the main points of Rashi. And he says Sha'afal Gav De Rav Posei Kerab Yehuda, but Shas Hadchak Mekil Kerab Shimon. Shalo less or davish and esav beknisa Shabbos v'chein b'makom sakonas chaborim shehu shas adchak hiter rav l'salek es haner kasser Rabbi Kiva Eger shalo yitochen. You can't take Rashi kipshuto shekavanoso l'sakonas nefashos mamish. It can't be sakonas nefashos. She came to Sakonis the Foshos, Afilu Isu Doraisa Nidche. And again, I would add the following words. So, why do they have a suffix about it? Ella Sakona, she tochen Afilu Altsad Harochok, she tovoli de Sakonis the Foshos. Ubi Ofen Kaze Eno Machalas Hashem.
Afilu says only when they're around. So, maybe this they weren't there, but they may come. So if they may come, it's like a suffix of a suffix.
Well, they might take their baseball bat to your Hanukkah, nice Hanukkah,
to the entire area,
and smash it.
They were being
parsimonious. Sir, I both say we're on the verge of entering into a whole big, gigantic sugya, profound sugya. For example, you know that the Mechaber says that in on Yom Kippur in a Shas Sakana, if a chola is very sick, then you feed him pachos mikashir.
Yes.
And Reb Chaim used to paskin that we feed him kisuda shloma melch b'shaito. Let him just eat a full suda on Yom Kippur. So they asked Reb Chaim, but what about the Shulchan Aruch? So Reb Chaim said that the Shulchan Aruch is talking about a chole who might become a chole sheyesh bo sakana. So by feeding him pachos mikashir, we could prevent him from hitdardarut, from how do you say hitdardarut in English?
Worsening.
Yeah, okay, but there's a word for it. Okay, fine.
Decay.
I see my English and your English are both aftalachas. You know, anyway, it might become a depreciation. No, what's the word I want to use?
That is
deterioration. Oh. Ben always comes to Ben has got it. Ben, you're my man. I'm telling you, you don't know how much I owe someone in Hakar Satov when he comes with the word that I need. It's mamish. It's mayin olam habo. Okay. So again, according to the Shulchan Aruch, you feed someone pachas mamkus shir when the situation, if left as is, we can anticipate it'll deteriorate and then it'll become a chol sheish po sakana. Reb Chaim said my psak was in a case where he's already in a sakana. You know, he's already in the intensive care unit, and now his life is in the balance. In such a case, you feed him kishlom avel pshay. Don't start running around with pachas mi kashir. I suspect, I might be dead wrong about this, that our sugya here is talking about a shas sakana, which the Mechaber is talking about, the way Reb Chaim understood it, meaning that it could become a shas sakana. Right now, there's no danger, but it might become a shas sakana. He adds the fact that it's al tzad harachok. So I don't know what he means by tzad harachok. It's what...
far-fetched?
What percentage, statistically, would make it into a real sakana. Now the statistics are so low that it's only a al tzad harachok. We could be mekil as far as mukts is concerned, but not as far as an isa d'oraisa. And again, this is all based on the fact that tiltul is only an isa d'rabbanan. If we were talking about achila, then we would be dealing with an isa d'oraisa. I'm not sure how quick Rav would have been to be making when the yeshiva guys asked him this question. And I would go even a step further. I would say that in the case of a pregnant woman, that's not a tzad rachok. Now, I don't know what the statistical probabilities in the 21st century of chas v'shalom, a woman losing a life as a result of childbirth. What would say, probably a 1 in 1,000, 1 in 10,000, 1 in 100,000. I don't know how many women chas v'shalom die at childbirth all later, but nevertheless, we'll do everything that we have to do for such a woman. So when he says al tzad harachok, I don't know if it's a tzad harachok, which is a couple of percentage points. I would say that that's pikuach nefesh mamish, and we'll feed him kisuda shloma melch b'shaito. But if, on the other hand, tzad harachok means it splashed on the front page of the newspaper, you know, because such a thing happened, it's so unusual, very rare.
If it's remote, you don't.
Very remote. That would be considered tzad harachok. I think that's what he means here, that they were mekel in mukta because it's only remote. And that's what we have here. So that's what he says, shas adchak shiny. So again, Rav Osi, the bottom line is that Rav accepts the shita of Rabbi Yehuda, that migudis matzoy ben ashvosis katzoy ben ash lekuli yoma, the amri le Rav Kahana Ravashi le Rav hachi hilchasa. They asked him, Rav, could it be that we are allowed to be metaltal the ner shekob amalei kidei? I'm sorry, Kedayu Rabbi Shimon Lismach Alav B'Shas Hadchak. Wow, this is unbelievable. If I read the Gemara correctly here, I think what Rav was saying is that according to Rabbi Yehuda, you would not be allowed to move this Nair. And Dr. Joel, that's even further proof that we're not talking about, even though Rashi uses the term Sakana, we're not talking about Sakana, because then how can Rabbi Yehuda, even if you accept Migu, and even if you accept the Isa Muksa, how can the Isa Muksa override Pikuach Nefesh? But when it's a tzad harachok, then Rabbi Yehuda is going to insist that we maintain our adherence to the Isa Mukta, and we're going to rely on Rabbi Shimon b'shas hadchak. But now we come back to Shmuel's question from an hour ago, and Shmuel asked me, how do we paskin? And you get the impression that Rav paskins like Rabbi Yehuda against Rabbi Shimon. It's only b'shas hadchak. He uses Rabbi Shimon as a fallback position. And at this point, I would love to take out a Mishnah Berurah and see if we can find in the Shulchan Aruch what he paskins. He writes the following: Yesh lahavin, im Rav sover shalochik Rabbi Yehuda keitzed who make him b'shas hadchak Rav Shimon, falo who sover Rav holds ein halochik Rav Shimon. Urei b'achronim, he doesn't tell you which achronim, shepirshu, they explain, shekshechachomim gazru es gzerosam lo gazru b'shas hadchak. Pilei plon, he's going to tell me that even Rabbi Yehuda would be mekel here because it's a shas hadchak, and the original gzer of mukta was not instituted b'shas hadchak. That's not what it says in the Gemara. The Gemara says kedayu Rav Shimon l'smoch alav b'shas hadchak. It doesn't say that even Rabbi Yehuda would insist that in Shas HaTchak they never made the Gzeir of Muktzah. So I don't know what to do with this. He doesn't even tell you where to find this. This is footnote number 8. Now, as far as Mukhni is concerned, let's just again review and summarize what we know. We don't know everything about Mukhni, but what we know is that Mukhni has a base kibul, and therefore can function on its own as a kli. And the issue is, do we define it as part of the Shida or not, with many, many different repercussions, la'alocha and tuma v'tara, and one major repercussion on Hilchos Shabbos as far as Mukhni is concerned. And that is the following. If we, and here's the paradox. If we define Mukhni as part and parcel of the agola, of the kli, the agala itself, the shida itself, then we can be makil. If on the other hand we define it as a separate independent kli unto itself, then we have to be machmir. Why is that so? So first of all, how do we define Mukhni? This galgal, do we define it as part of the shido as a separate kli unto itself? It all depends on whether it's nishmetes, the ein chibrula, or ef shalafarko, and it's a permanent addition and connected to the shido itself. Okay, now let's take the case where it's permanently attached to the shido. Why are we going to be makil in mukta here? And the answer is because the mos are not sitting on the ikra kli, and therefore there's no din of basis. When does it have a din of basis? That's only if it's sitting on the ikra kli. So if I view the mukhni in the case of ein chibrula bizman shi nishmetes as a separate independent kli, then paradoxically becomes the ikra kli, and we have to be machmir if the mos are munachos on the galgal, because then it's muktza munach al ikra kli. And in that case, we would not be allowed to move this agala by moving its ofanim, right? It's galgalim, because the galgalim now are being moved. Now, again, I'm a little confused here why it's not tiltum and not sad. I hope that somebody is going to address that issue. Maybe tiltum and atzad would not apply when you move something kidarko. That's the general way you move these galgalim, these wheels. But if, on the other hand, there's a chibur law, and the ofanim are permanently attached to what? To the shida, then the halacha is lekula. Why is it lekula in that case? Because then the mukhni is not defined as ikara kli, and therefore there's no din of basis, because basis only applies with the ikara kli. So even though the mos are sitting on the shida, I'm allowed to move the shida, and the mos will be moved on top of the galgal. And the reason for that is because the galgal is not the ikara kli, it's only tafil to the kli, and that's because it functions on behalf and facilitates the movement of the shida. It doesn't have its own function, it's been permanently attached to the shida, and then the law of buses doesn't apply. Would buses apply throughout Shabbos, even if I remove the mos? That's going to be a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda holds midu skatzol ben hashpos skatzol kul yoma. Rabbi Shimon holds that even though his mukta are going into Shabbos, there was a potential hachana for the time period after the mukta was removed. He rejects migu, and Rav himself paskins like Rabbi Yehuda that migu diskatsoi, and therefore if the mos are on the mita going into Shabbos, the mita is mukta even when you remove the mos. However, Rav is mekel b'shas adchak. And what's the shas adchak? That's going to be this case of an Er Chanukah with the Chaborim, the Parsiim, and it's right. It's a what we called a tzad rachok of sakonis nefashis. Exactly what that means is Rabbi Shimon in this case, a reliable posek, and here Rav v'shas adchak is going to embrace Rabbi Shimon, or does it mean that since the shas adchak was never included in the original gzera, then even Rabbi Yehuda can be makil and move this Ner Chanukah after it goes out? Yes, Shmuel?
I had this idea previously when we were talking about Hatzalah Mitzuyah, and I never got a chance to ask you, and it only makes this question much worse, that maybe all the brightos we had, that they gave up on the attack, and they said Hatzala Mitzuyah and Yiru, is actually, they were saying, B'dieved, that could be Rav Shimon.
So that was the sugya of Ein Kli Nito El Dovra Nito, am I right?
Yeah.
Rabba Shita, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I have to tell you that sugya we never really finished, yeah, so we have to come back to that. We can either start with Kikar Tinok or with that sugya, I don't know. I'll try to, you know, we'll see in the next week what I get a chance to look at.
I know.
Going away for a week.
No,
so I want to just take this opportunity to thank everybody and wish everyone well. And you should be matzliach in your chazara while I'm gone. And I'll see you next Wednesday, Mitzvah Shabbat.
Have a good trip.
If the plane lands on time.
Yeah.
Have an enjoyable trip.
Yeah,
I'll be coming here straight from the airport.
Should be very careful, refreshed, and enjoyable.
We used to say every landing always late, but they broke that reputation. So.
That was the name of the song.
I'd rather pay more for their security.
Yeah,
other airlines are such a joke.
I agree with you. Yeah. And lately, I've had some good experiences with El Al.